The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. Now, for the next half hour or so, we're going to be reading to you from a group of articles, one from the New York Times and then the Washington Post, and also the Associated Press. But before we begin, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading on today's Armchair Traveler. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on Armchair Traveler today, we will focus on changes in modes of travel and take another look at some lesser-known destinations in the Big Apple. Now, first up is a story that appeared in the October 2022 issue of the New York Times. Now, the headline reads, "Goodbye Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Hello Luxury Bus." It's written by Marcia Kramer. Now, she writes about how travel companies are hoping more Americans will embrace the concept of sleeper and luxury coaches. And they add, just don't call them buses. And you may have seen some of these vehicles in your travels lately. A few every now and then will pop up on the highway. And I've even seen them in the Raleigh area where we record this show. So let's learn more about this as we go to this article and begin. John Rosenberg found a last-minute flight for $200 last month, and that would have been in September 2022, from Washington, D.C. to Nashville to see Pearl Jam. But flights home were $600, and there was no easy way to take the train. Mr. Rosenberg started searching for buses online. He stumbled on Napaway, a company that promised premium overnight accommodations on an 18-passenger bus with seats that fold into a flatbed and come with a pillow and plush blanket. Now, the week before, Mr. Rosenberg and his friends had spent 18 hours at Midway Airport in Chicago after they were bounced off their connecting flight to Washington. He spent the night cold and slept a total of 45 minutes in the airport chapel before security kicked him out. The Napaway, Mr. Rosenberg reasoned, could not be worse, and at least he would be traveling, not waiting. He booked the flight to Nashville and a ticket home on the Napaway for $125. "My friends were all making fun of me," Mr. Rosenberg, age 47, said. "You're going to spend 11 hours on a luxury bus?" they asked. Well, he was. On a Sunday night, after spending the weekend in Nashville, Mr. Rosenberg joined five other passengers, including me, on the Napaway, which in June 2022 began taking travelers back and forth from Washington to Nashville. The company and other premium bus companies like it are betting that Americans will abandon the image of the rumbling, cramped bus as the transport of last resort for the cash-strapped and embrace long-haul coach travel. Well, giant sleeper buses have been a staple of travel in parts of Latin America and Asia for decades. But in the United States, the concept has never taken hold despite our vast highway system. Around 2017, Cabin, a two-story bus with beds tucked into private pods, began taking passengers from Los Angeles to San Francisco for overnight trips, but stopped in 2020. Gaetano Crupi, the founder of Cabin, declined to comment on why the service ended. More successful have been high-end coach services that offer shorter journeys like Red Coach, Von Lane, and The Jet, a 14-seat bus that ferries people from Metro Center in Washington to Hudson Yards in Manhattan. They advertise seats that recline far back, high-speed Wi-Fi, and a feeling that even though you're technically on an intercity bus, you are on a refined, affordably priced journey, said Adisha Ranjaberry, an assistant professor of travel behavior at Penn State University. "You don't see the word bus anywhere in the advertisements," she said. "They say it's a first-class luxury experience." Napaway is the only fully flat sleeper bus in the country, said Dan Aronoff of the company's founder and chief executive. He's aware that many travelers may be skeptical of taking a 10 to 11-hour bus ride when a flight from Washington to Nashville takes less than 2 hours. He responds by pointing out how miserable the airport experience can be. Flying is faster, but a passenger will still spend several hours getting to the airport, going through security, and then waiting at the gate. And that is assuming a flight is not delayed, Mr. Aronoff said. Contrast that experience with traveling while lying on a memory foam mattress pad and snuggling under a blanket, he said. You were going to spend 7 to 8 hours asleep, Mr. Aronoff said. Now you're just doing it in motion. A private jet experience. Ironically, it was companies like Megabus and Boltbus, which offered $1 rides and curbside pickup in the early part of the 2000s, that paved the way for premium coach travel, said Joseph Swederman, professor of public service at DePaul University in Chicago, and director of the Chaddick Institute for Metropolitan Development, which studies intercity bus travel. Those companies renewed interest in intercity bus travel and spurred more innovation and investment, he said. Now, as train service remains elusive in much of the South and air travel continues to frustrate travelers, it is possible that stars have aligned for premium coach travel, Professor Swederman said. Premium coach lines have significantly fewer overhead costs than rail and especially airlines, which have much higher fuel costs and need a small army of employees to operate, he said. By contrast, a premium bus requires a crew of one or two drivers and perhaps one attendant, which means that even if a company sells fewer than half of its seats on a trip, it can still cover its costs so long as it does not lower fares to compete with conventional bus lines, Professor Swederman said. Mia Reed, a singer from Brooklyn who found trains too costly and airplanes inconvenient, said she was eager to find a luxury bus that would take her to visit her parents in Fredericksburg, Virginia, after having nightmare experiences on other bus rides. Ms. Reed, age 29, said she learned about the jet on Instagram and TikTok, where videos showed wide seats powered by motion-canceling technology. Booking online was easy, and the jet was beautiful and a little bit better organized than an ordinary bus, Miss Reed said. An attendant came by frequently during the four-hour trip to check on passengers and pass out snacks, coffee, wine, and soda. It's meant to feel like a private jet experience, said Chad Scarborough, the company's founder and chief executive, hence the name Jet. Still, buses have a tricky place in the American imagination. Weird Al Yankovic warned us of them in Another One Rides the Bus. Now, that's his parody of Queen's Another One Bites the Dust. In movies, more often than not, they are used in settings to show the protagonist at their most annoyed, imperiled, or dead. When I told relatives that I would be riding an overnight bus to Nashville, one of them suggested I carry a pocket knife. I arrived in Washington on Friday to catch the Napaway with my friend Teresa. We found the bus at 9:30 p.m. at the designated meeting spot, a well-lit parking lot on L Street Northeast near the Wonder Garden, an outdoor beer garden where Miley Cyrus's Party in the USA blared from the speakers, and the sound of laughter wafted over the fence. We were joined by three other passengers, Amy Comer, Connor, an 80-year-old retiree who was visiting her grandson in Nashville, Guillermo Saltano, a shy 50-year-old woman from the Dominican Republic, and Catherine Lee, a 50-year-old graduate student studying social work. We gawked at the bus, an enormous black coach with a galaxy of stars painted on the side. Inside were 36 seats, two for each passenger, that convert into flat sort of S-shaped beds. Miss Connor, who skydived for the first time at 70 and went ziplining at 80, said she booked the bus for the novelty of it. She said when she told a friend about the bus, the friend replied, "What a great idea for a bachelorette party." But rowdy partygoers run counter to the ethos of the Napaway, which asks passengers to refrain from loud talking or playing their devices out loud. No one under 8 can ride the Napaway, said Mr. Aronoff. The jet, which charges fares starting at $99 for a one-way ticket, has an age minimum of 6. I'm very sympathetic to parents, Mr. Aronoff said, but right now, for the comfort of other passengers, we have an age minimum. Mr. Aronoff, age 29, said he chose Nashville because it's a busy urban hub, popular with tourists in an area of the country with few public transit options. Mr. Aronoff, an Oxford University graduate who worked at Barclays Investment Bank and Lowe's Corporation, said he started Napaway with the help of individual investors, not large institutions. He declined to say how much it cost to start Napaway, but said the company is not breaking even yet. It's a new concept, and it takes time for the word to get out, Mr. Aronoff said. He's hoping to add more routes. Passengers have requested trips from Washington to Atlanta, New York, and Boston. The bus has added stops in Knoxville on the Washington-Nashville route, and in November will add Wednesday and Thursday to the weekly schedule. Now keep in mind, again, this was 2022. As we continue, travelers have ranged in ages from 9 to 93, Mr. Aronoff said. Mr. Aronoff joined us on our trip. He said he tries to ride the Napaway as much as possible. As the bus pulled away, he described how to lower the seats and pull down the black privacy screen. Each passenger received a sleep mask, toothpaste, and a small toothbrush, earplugs, and a disposable towelette. Ms. Saltano struggled with her privacy screen, and Mr. Aronoff rushed to help her. She burrowed under her blanket, looked at her phone for a few minutes, and then quickly fell asleep. I lowered my seats, laid the mattress down, curled into the fetal position, and drifted off to sleep, wondering if someone over 6 feet tall would be as comfortable. Mr. Aronoff said the beds are long enough that anyone up to 6 foot 4 inches tall should be able to lie flat without having to curl up their knees. I woke up briefly at 2 a.m. If anyone was snoring, I could not hear it over the soft whirring of the engine and the rumbling wheels. The bus jostled, but the rocking motion was lulling as I drifted back to sleep. I imagine this was how a baby nestled in a carriage feels. I awoke at 7, surprised by how refreshed I felt. The bus dropped us off in downtown Nashville, where my friend and I spent about 36 hours, plenty of time to visit the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum and RCA Studio B, catch live music at Rudy's Jazz Room, and overeat at Biscuit Love, Peg Leg Porker, and Manel's. Well, I met Mr. Rosenberg, the Pearl Jam fan, on the ride back to Washington, where we were joined by Ms. Connor, Ms. Lee, and Mr. Aronoff. The trip home was as peaceful as the trip down. An accident on Interstate 81 created a 5-mile backup around 5 a.m., delaying our arrival by about an hour. No one seemed annoyed. I would go anywhere on this bus, Ms. Connor said as she stretched and rose from her seat. Mr. Rosenberg said he slept well, about 4 hours, a typical night's sleep for him. This was fantastic, he told Mr. Aronoff as he stepped off the bus and shook his hand. Most comfortable I've ever been on a bus. I asked Mr. Rosenberg if he would ride the Napaway again. Yes, he said, but only if a one-way plane ticket costs more than $300. Well, there's a standard there, I guess. Well, we're going to head to New York City next, and where riders are reminiscing as New York retires iconic subway cars. Yeah, now this story, written by Carla Marie Sanford, appeared in the December 31st, 2024 issue of the Washington Post. And basically, as the subhead says, the MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Authority, says it will retire about its entire R46 fleet in New York. And writers say they're going to miss these iconic yellow and orange perpendicular seats that were part of many memories. Now more from the story by Carla Marie Sanford. Growing up, Alvaro Hernandez always ran for the window seat on the subway. His older brother sat in the seat next to him, and his parents sat in the seats immediately perpendicular to them both so they would keep watch on them. Now, this seating arrangement encouraged subway riders to engage with one another, Hernandez said. Everyone would talk about what they were going to do, what they were going to cook, he said, referring to summertime F-train excursions to Coney Island. And they'd invite you to where they were going to be. Now, New Yorkers are celebrating a seating arrangement and its memories after the Metropolitan Transit Authority recently announced the imminent replacement of the R46 fleet. The change that's happening now with this new sort of move away from the kind of conversational to the long bench seats and actually more standing room feels a little bit seismic for people because it is, says Conchetta Benjikavanga, director of the New York Transit Museum. Delivery of the latest order of the replacement car, the R211, is expected in 2027. It is unclear, rather, whether the R46 will be completely retired, but riders are sounding off on social media. Some are lamenting the ability to get cozy in duo seaters with their boo. Some regret that they can no longer isolate themselves in the corner seat window. And others, like Hernandez, will miss the opportunity to easily take in the scenery as the train eclipses the underground and heads south above ground toward the beach. I used to love it when the subway would go from indoors to outdoors, Hernandez said. I used to kneel down and look out the window. It was like looking at my own world. An iconic car. To understand the significance of the R-46 train car, you have to understand a bit of subway history. The New York subway system stands out for the expansive territory it covers, said Andrew Sparberg, a transportation historian and retired railroad manager. You would not have had the five boroughs of New York without the subway system, he said, but what most people now know as the MTA began as the three distinct lines, the Interborough Rapid Transit Company, or IRT, the Brooklyn-Manhattan Transit Corporation, or BMT, and the Independent Subway System, IND. The IRT, or the A Division, was built for speed and would come to be the numbered train lines. One of its slogans was City Hall to Harlem in 15 minutes, and the trains, Benchavenga said, delivered. Now, the BMT and the IND, the B Division, were built for comfort on long-day trips out of Manhattan to places like Coney Island or Rockaway Beach, Benchavenga said. These lettered trains were wider and longer, and they featured seats against the windows, longitudinal, and perpendicular to the windows, transverse. They were really built to be a little more conversational, Benchavenga said. The R-46, a 50-year-old B Division train car, is in service on the ACNRQW lines. 696 of the original 754 cars were in service in October of 2024. But its design stems directly from the comfort cars of yesteryear, at the time outfitted with rattan seats. It was really a different physical relationship to the passengers, said Mitchell Moss, a professor of urban policy and planning at New York University's Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. Here you are sitting there against the wall and you're looking out at people standing in front of you or people opposite you where the others have much more eye contact. Several car models have been retired since the MTA's inception, but the R-46 with yellow and orange seats and wooden paneling is very iconic, Benchavenga said. If you come in on this with no other identifying information, if you stepped on this, you would very likely be able to surmise that you were in New York, she said of the train. In the real world, there are very few experiences nowadays that will kind of invoke that sort of visceral reaction, right? Well, when you step on board, you're like, yep, got it. And that's this. Out with the old and in with the new. The subway has been in the headlines lately for violent incidents, including a woman being set on fire on F train in December. Trouble in public transit has long been central to the story of the New York Bernard Goetz's shooting of four black young black men in a subway car became a worldwide flashpoint in 1984. Daniel Penny's choking of Jordan Neely led to outrage in 2023. But for many New Yorkers, the joys of a mundane ride eclipse those infamous moments. For Hernandez, age 54, the train reminds him of dance-battling crews during the early years of hip-hop. On the weekends, he and his friends from Brooklyn would ride around the five boroughs looking for kids to breakdance battle. Everyone had a different job in a crew, he explained. There was always a guy carrying the boombox. One would carry the drinks and the munchies for the long trip. His job, he said, was to carry the backpack full of spray paint for graffiti. Timohep Aku, age 45, another native New Yorker, also associated the R-46 with a sense of nostalgia. Riding the train with girlfriends and sitting smushed together in the back-to-back love seats will always have a place in my heart, he said. Star Navarro, age 25, said he likes the retro style of the car and dislikes the overall push toward sleek and modern, which ruins the atmosphere on the train. But while New Yorkers may feel nostalgia for the look and feel of the classic car, in this case experts say the new cars really are for the better good. The R-46 is not reliable, Sparberg said. The R-46 has less than a half the reliability rating considered good, he said, and nearly a quarter's worth of the rail car that's replacing it, according to the MTA. Now, even more important, Moss said, new cars introduced to the train system will be a lot more information dense. According to an MTA news release, the new cars will feature security cameras in every car, more accessible seating, brighter lights, clearer signage, and wider seats. Before, because people were looking at the advertising, they were looking at each other's newspaper headlines. There was more visual connectivity on the train among the passengers, Moss said. Now each person is a self-contained producer and consumer of their own information, but they are more connected to the outside world, which I think is very important for emergencies. Sparberg agreed, saying the audio and visual elements will increase accessibility on the new trains. Benchavinga explained that the longitudinal seats in the R211 will allow for more standing room and streamline passenger circulation, measures meant to decrease 12 times the train is stopped at platforms and ultimately produce a more efficient ride. But who's to say the R46 retro-cool design might not circle back into fashion? After all, the open gangways of the R211 were first sported in the 1925 triplex a century ago. So there's the rundown on the latest of the subway system in New York City. So gives you some idea of what's going on. And we're going to step away from that iconic subway system and join Associated Press writer Catherine Roth, who wrote this story on December 11th, 2024, headlined here, New York City has scores of small, specialized, or quirky museums. And here are some highlights. So let's see what she will tell us. New York can be a magical place for museum goers. It can also be overwhelming and overcrowded at times, especially at the biggest, most famous museums. Luckily, the city has scores of great museums to choose from. Everything from small and quirky to elegant gems housed in historic mansions to preserved Lower East Side tenement apartments and hands-on experiences that might surprise even longtime New Yorkers. Going to the Museum of Modern Art or the Metropolitan Museum of Art or the American Museum of Natural History is fantastic, but they can be like a big, supersized coffee drink, while we're more like a cup of espresso, said Alex Kallman, director of two of the city's tiniest museums, M Museum M1 and M Museum M2. One is built into an old elevator shaft in a downtown alleyway. Both museums are closed for the holidays, but they reopen in the spring, and that is this year. At other small museums, you'll find a cozy Viennese-style coffee shop, kosher Jewish comfort food like bagels, blintzes, herring, and house-cured salmon, and edgy gift shops to rival MoMA's famous ones. You could view the chair that George Washington sat in before giving his inaugural address to Congress, and New York City was the seat of U.S. government in those days. Or you might make seltzer or solve math puzzles. Now, here's some of what's happening at New York's other museums, and that's in quotes. We start at the museum at FIT, F-I-T, on 27th Street, tucked inside the Fashion Institute of Technology, that's where FIT comes from, behind the big sculpture in front, is the city's only museum solely devoted to fashion, and it's free. The current show, Africa's Fashion Diaspora, runs through December 29th. It's about Africa as an idea that continues to inspire designers from Africa and also those whose ancestors came from Africa, says museum director Valerie Steele. Opening in February is Fashioning Wonder, a cabinet of curiosities, exploring connections between cabinets of curiosities and fashion. Next, we have the Nui Gallery. Nui, by the way, is N-E-U-E. It's found on Fifth Avenue. This museum, housed in a 1914 Gilded Age mansion that was once home to Society Dorian Mrs. Cornelius Vanderbilt III, focuses on art and design from Austria and Germany. Its Café Sabarsky is a destination of its own, with 1912 upholstery, period decor, and a grand piano in the corner used for cabaret, chamber, and classical music performances. On view now is the Egon Schiele Living Landscapes and Austrian Masterworks from the Neue Gallery. The museum transports you to Christmas in Vienna, says director Renee Price. We dress up our 1914 historic landmark building with wreaths and ribbons evoking a prior era. Delight in some apple strudel and savor our hot chocolate with rum in Cafe Siborski. And by the way, they offer a travel tip here. The cafe is at its quietest for breakfast. So there you go, a place for breakfast that's quiet. Now we have the Jewish Museum, and we find that on 92nd Street and 5th Avenue. Not far from the Neue Gallery, on view now are the Eliot Azuli Mere Things, the first solo exhibit in a U.S. museum dedicated to the Berlin-based artist. And engaging with history, works from the collection. Other displays include the Tel Dan Steel, a 19th century BCE stone monument fragment containing the earliest mention of the Royal House of David outside of the Bible. The gift shop features an impressive array of menorahs, dreidels, Hanukkah candles, and specialty gifts, including works by artist Odit Halimi. Now, there's a cafe with updated takes on traditional bagels, blintzes, herring, and house-cured salmon. There's also a Hanukkah-related family programming. We move next to Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum, found on East 91st Street. Also nearby, one of the city's two Smithsonian museums, the Cooper Hewitt focuses on innovative design. Its gift shop rivals MoMA's, and there's a private garden and small restaurant. The museum is housed in the former home of industrial magnate Andrew Carnegie. Completed in 1902, the mansion was the first in the U.S. to have a structural steel frame and one of the first in the city to have a residential Otis passenger elevator. It was also among the first homes to feature central heating. It's now LEED certified and features other cutting-edge technologies. A major exhibit on now, Making Homes, Smithsonian's Design Triennial, explores designs and role in shaping concepts of home physically and emotionally. Now, this museum sprawls over the entire mansion and will be on view through August 10th. Next, the National Museum of the American Indian at 1 Bowling Green Street, the other Smithsonian in town at the lower end of Manhattan inside the Alexander Hamilton U.S. Customs House, now a city landmark. Admission is free. Current exhibitions include Jeffrey Verege of Gods and Hunters, or Heroes, I should say, Native New York and Infinity of Nations. The gift shop features authentic Native American art, crafts, apparel, and jewelry from a wide representation of groups, in addition to books by and about Native Americans. Then we have the Tenement Museum on Orchard Street with something for all ages. The Tenement Museum is housed in two preserved tenement buildings, one from the 1863, the other from 1888. Each apartment is a kind of time capsule telling the story of a different immigrant or migrant family who lived there. The museum also offers walking tours of the neighborhood. What is most unique about the Tenement Museum is that it shines the spotlight on ordinary people, working-class families who never imagined they'd one day be subject to a museum, says Tenement Museum President Annie Pollard. And then we have the New York Historical, which is at Central Park West, a great way to learn more about the city's history, including the fact that Washington was inaugurated here. A permanent gallery on the fourth floor features a detailed recreation of the White House Oval Office in Washington, D.C., where presidents have worked since 1909. And two more real quickly here as time is running out. MoMath, National Museum of Mathematics, is found on Fifth Avenue, a hands-on museum, all kinds of math-oriented puzzles and thought-inspiring curiosities. And then we have the Brooklyn Seltzer Museum on Hemlock Street in Brooklyn, an interactive museum and factory tour run in partnership with the city's oldest seltzer works, a family business now in its fourth generation. Lots to see in the Big Apple, my friends. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Any questions or comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.